now 10:45 and our meeting is resumed.
Okay, next up is Kevin Johnston to give us an update on the broadband access for PUD customers. Good morning, Kevin.
Kevin, you're on mute. There you go.
Okay. Morning. My apologies for the buttonology errors here this morning. I assume you all can hear me. If you can't, let me know. Thank you very much for having me this morning, commissioners. My name is Kevin Johnston. I'm the district cybersecurity architect for information technology and also the broadband study lead. And I'm very pleased to be addressing you this morning as to the efforts and progress of our study to understand the gaps in broadband access for PUD customers. And as part of our discussion here this morning, we'll start out with a few slides discussing background and context for how we find ourselves studying this important topic, and also then moving into a description of the work that has been done, the hard work of the team in getting the study this far over the past 6 months or so, and then a discussion of our forecasted way ahead for the remainder of the study. So, barring any questions now, I think we'll go ahead and start just to kind of get us on the same page as to how we're defining broadband for purposes of our internal study. And in general, broadband is a large-scale term commonly referring to high-speed internet access that is always on and faster than traditional dial-up. And the focus on speed is really important because that is really an indicator in terms of bandwidth of what can be accomplished over that connection, right? So greater bandwidth in general permits a greater diversity of activities that can be accomplished using that connection. And for the purposes here, we're using broadband to include a number of technologies, some very old, to include things like digital subscriber line, which is delivered over traditional telephone lines. Also cable modem, fiber optics, which is really the backbone for most of the high-speed connections, wireless and cellular of a traditional sense to include things like 4G and or LTE that we're pretty much generally familiar with, but also emerging technologies such as 5G and or Starlink satellites, for instance. So really, we're defining broadband as a catch-all to describe high-speed internet access that is persistent and it offers a greater speed of connectivity to permit a greater range of activities on the network. So with that as a definition of the what, we can discuss here the, we'll discuss the why. So why is Stonewash PUD studying gaps in broadband access? And really the need for this does predate COVID, but the pressures associated with the adjustments to the pandemic have magnified the inequities in terms of broadband accessibility. And we see these stories told regularly in national news stories, state and local news stories as well, and the need for reliable broadband to engage in commerce, education, telemedicine, telecommuting is really more important than ever. And as a result, customers, elected community leaders throughout Snohomish County and Camino Island have requested that the district explore potential partnerships in terms of how we might responsibly engage in providing remedy to our unserved and underserved areas. And it's really the convergence of the inequities that are highlighted by the pandemic and the requests for how we might consider to addressing the digital divide that have suggested to district leadership that it was prudent to educate and study the issue of broadband for ourselves. And I'd really like to stop here to just kind of focus on the highlighted and underlined section there of educate and study. That the intent of this study is really for knowledge and awareness and an increased understanding of the factors that contribute to the climate of broadband access, both what is provided, but also what is not provided, and why, and understanding truly from a multifaceted perspective, because the issue is quite complex, where the gaps exist, why they exist, what the factors that go into the existing gaps, and really if there is a way for us to responsibly engage. And so this is a study for the purpose of understanding. There at the conclusion of the study, which I'll address, we'll certainly have knowledge and recommendations that we will absolutely share with the board. But for the purposes of our project right now, what we're attempting to do is understand the highly complex factors that contribute to gaps in broadband access. So I'll stop there and pause for any questions that you might have based on the what and the why thus far.
Questions, commissioners?
This is at this point, Commissioner Wolf. Mm-hmm. I like that you're going to emphasize educating and studying the issues, and it's more than one issue. So as part of this, I want to learn more. And so I hope that, you know, as early as you feel comfortable, you will share with us what you're learning. I am particularly interested in, hello? Can you hear me?
Yes,
yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. I'm particularly interested in hardwiring as much as possible to reduce electromagnetic radiation that can come from some of these new systems that are 5G is a lot of it. Many people have concerns about 5G. And I just learned recently that 5G, and you probably know this already, but it's going to include the previous generations, the 3 and the 4, and the 5 will be all mixed together. Are you aware of that?
Specifically, no, but I believe that I've seen allusions.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to educate myself about it. And the issue for a lot of people, there's so many young people who are almost forced to use virtual everything with school. And so I'm really concerned about the health effects of all of this. So I'd really like to be able to share with you some of my new learning about this and how people can protect themselves. They can have all of these gadgets, they can have the benefits of broadband, but they can also at the same time protect themselves from EMR.
Absolutely. And we'd definitely be looking forward to hearing that in the future as well. And as I referenced on the previous slide, in terms of describing how we're considering broadband, we're taking a look at a broad spectrum of technologies, but I think it's probably worth clarification that we're not considering implementing the broad spectrum of technology, right? That it is not that we're looking at 5G as a solution internally.
Right.
Or that we're not looking at it. We're looking at everything holistically. But I don't want there to be an interpretation that we're looking at the total of high-speed internet broadband delivery technologies for implementation within a potential broadband offer, because there has been no decision at this point of whether or not we would proceed or not proceed. This is a study for study's sake. But the technology suite is being examined for understanding and awareness of potential implications, some of which you have referenced, It would be a bridge too far at this point to assume that any technology has been targeted or highlighted for any potential implementation. Okay. All right, I'll move on. So we've kind of boiled down this very large scale effort into a couple of big questions, right? And these really are the guiding questions that are providing direction as we embark on educating and understanding. And those are, what are the risks and opportunities related to broadband? Why does a gap in broadband accessibility exist? What is the scope of the problem? What models exist to address the digital divide? What do current and emerging technologies look like? And what would engagement in any form mean for our existing customers? And I think the theme throughout these questions is that these are high level strategic questions that are really going to the root of the system as a whole, right? The system meaning the socioeconomic factors that contribute to this, the political factors that contribute to this, the economic factors, and also the technical system level architecture and all those factors. And I'll focus on the third question. What is the scope of the problem? And scope in this case is quite large. And in terms of how we could define the scope, right? Is scope a lack of access for a particular subset of customers? Is scope cost of a future potential implementation? Is scope measured in terms of a upload or download metric? And the ways to define scope in terms of understanding the scale and impact of the potential gap is as multifaceted as the problem itself. And so part of our study here is really to understand those factors and all the different metrics that go into scoping the problem. So on one metric, we could simply say, hey, we understand that X percent of the customer base is unserved per a given metric. What is that metric? And there are differing opinions from different organizations as to how to measure both unserved and underserved. And that is a large and central task of the study as we see it in terms of providing an understanding for ourselves and something that works internally to define scope. So that is really the guiding principle as we look to conduct our internal analysis in terms of providing data to support our understanding and have it be an informed understanding of the scope of the problem. So to execute that and to further those ends, what we've done is stand up three working groups, which I'll describe in the next slide, to utilize the depth and breadth of our own internal expertise. And then we've engaged those work groups to identify key stakeholders, answer those big questions that we just talked about, and resolve where outside expertise will bring value. And then moving forward, we'll engage with outside expertise and then develop a principled approach to making a decision or recommendation as to how we will conduct our business case analyses moving forward. So as I mentioned, this study is for education and understanding. And really the way I see the output of this study is a collection, most likely more than one, of business case analyses that really highlight the factors and maybe some additional business models that could be considered for a potential broadband offering, but also could be looked at as a potential choice to not proceed into this area as well. So I want to emphasize that the decision space is still very wide open here, and that is the intent of this study, is to inform district leadership and inform you as the commission as to the factors that could influence our decision to either proceed or not proceed into a potential offering of broadband, either service or partnership with others to potentially provide a responsible option for providing or remedying the gaps in service that we know exist across the county. And then finally, rolling those up, as I just said, into a product for presentation to district leadership, in which we would make a recommendation for how we would like to proceed, or how we would recommend that the board proceeds with respect to consideration of a future broadband engagement. And then that does not have to take the form of a service offering. So the internal working groups were three total, legislative and regulatory, consisting of government relations personnel, legal, communications, and privacy professionals. And then our operations group, which consisted of electrical, fiber optic, and information technology engineers and experts. And then the fiscal group looking at the financial options, risk management, and also some telecommunications participation here to aid in scoping costs of potential future infrastructure. So those are the groups at a very high level, and I should note that each of those were led by three different leads. So Brenda White led or is the lead of the legislative and regulatory group. Gordon Hayslip leads the operations group, and Jim Hurling leads the fiscal group. So legislative and regulatory took a look at current and future legislative and regulatory environment, and I think that it's of utmost importance to note that this is an ever-changing and very complex landscape with a lot of motion at both the local, state, and federal levels, and we're looking not only at the current regulatory and legislative environment, but also the future state as well. Because as we look to any potential recommendation in the future for engagement in this area, we understand that the legislative and regulatory environment as it exists today in February of 2021 will be very likely quite different by the time that we could reasonably expect to engage in this area. And understanding the state and local government engagement and potential plans for the future is how we can best position ourselves with respect to both local, or excuse me, local, state, and federal entities to understand how to navigate the changing landscape that is presented as different legislation and potential options is considered. And then, of course, taking a look at a very fundamental level at the legal, regulatory, and privacy considerations of current legislation and regulations.
So, Kevin, this is probably just as good a place as any to ask this question.
Absolutely.
And that is, I think that the challenge from individuals that I've talked to, so, you know, the area I lived is an area that has many unserved and underserved customers in broadband, of course, and it's really being highlighted right now. But the concerns were there before the pandemic and working from home. And the issue seems to, or the challenge seems to be, is that nobody has the ball, right? The county has interest in increasing broadband, cities do, the state does, the federal government talks about it. We potentially could help with that or not. I'm curious what other states, other regions have done to, have there been other approaches to this, to resolve this issue with the commercial providers and public entities and filling the gap with what the commercial providers aren't providing?
I believe that we, if we look around at both other, if we take a national perspective, and we look at what other communities and other states, counties, et cetera, have done, what we see is a very localized solution. And that's to your point, that there is no singular source of motivation, of regulation, of funding, of really anything that provides, positive pressure into the system to provide a clear path of action for addressing these gaps. And so what we see is a locally generated set of options that works well for the entities that choose to provide or provision broadband access. And if we look, as we've engaged with our peers, and we've engaged with peers in state, but also market comparable peers in different states, we see that it's driven by the entities themselves. That it is a is by and large a choice of elected public leadership in the case of public entities to choose to make this a priority and something that they would like to address. That there is no mandate to do so as of yet, but that's one of the things that I think that we're attempting to forecast into the future is what are the changing legislative landscape potentially, you know, putting in the tea leaves for mandates to provide enhanced or increased coverage, right? And we don't know that, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse, and I don't want my comments to be misconstrued as providing any sort of forecast to that end. But I think if we, you know, is it a possibility? Absolutely. I wouldn't be able to say that it is a likelihood or a probability. But if we were to find ourselves in that situation, I think the knowledge that we would gain out of this study would absolutely become immediately valuable in saying, how would we structure, you know, a response to a legislative mandate from either the state or federal level that public entities come to the table with some sort of remedy to address the gaps that remain.
Thank you.
Any other questions for legislative regulatory?
John, you're on mute.
I was just gonna provide a little color commentary on Kevin's comments. And this is more just from kind of my observations, but I don't, you know, the telecom industry has kind of evolved, but it's never been considered an essential service like power and water. And with power and water, we have the obligation to serve a particular jurisdiction. And that's not the broadband or the telecom industry. It's not how it's structured at this point. And, you know, if you could, that's why the county, you know, everybody wants to be involved and wants to help, but nobody truly has jurisdiction or an obligation to provide these services. And I think if legislation goes there, to Kevin's point, which is spot on, you know, maybe through this due diligence, we could be in a place to know where and if we can play.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we knew all this, you know, years ago, it might have looked different, right? I mean, I think if our customers 71 years ago, when the utility was formed, could think about broadband, they would probably have said, yes, we want broadband ubiquitous, right? But of course, as you point out, the telecom industry didn't work that way. So,
no,
unfortunately, for some people, DSL, which is sort of poor broadband, works over phone lines, which are close to be ubiquitous, but yeah.
If we would have had the crystal ball back then, we could have been in a different place now, but that would go for a lot of different things.
That's true.
Right. And I think that a lot of that, you know, that both of those points and maybe a good summation of my own point is the fundamental question is whether or not in the future, the federal government or the state, you know, government or another jurisdictional governmental entity will come to mandate broadband access as a utility service. And if that ends up being the case, then it validates the prudence of taking the opportunity now to understand what those factors are.
Yeah, you better articulated my thought, Kevin. Thank you.
Kevin, this is Commissioner Wolf. In that last point, the bullet point about the analyses that you're planning to do, I know it might not make sense to you right now, but I'd like you to consider adding human and environmental health considerations. I'd like you to include those.
So I believe, I will say with certitude that those would be taken into consideration as part of a potential design of the network under an operational context, right? So the slide you see before you right now is part of the legislative and regulatory work, but in the next slide, which is a fantastic segue, we can discuss, the operations working group and things like electromagnetic spectrum, radio frequency interference, effects on health and those types of things, would be taken into consideration as part of the scoping of a potential broadband infrastructure build out if and when we ever find ourselves in that position to do so. Now, that's not to say that we would not look at those as part of a theoretical underpinning before we were to look at moving into this service space, but before we would commit time and resources to a given construction project or deployment of infrastructure, those types of considerations in terms of electromagnetic spectrum.
On your slide number 5, I liked your point about engaging outside expertise. And there's a lot of research that has been done in very recent years, even this year and the last 5 years, by medical doctors and other scientists that most people don't know about. And so I just want to talk to you at some point about some of those sources of expertise.
Absolutely, and I'm available at your convenience to discuss anything that you'd like to discuss.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
In our in both our internal analysis, but also our work with the external experts.
Good.
So, in terms of working with the operations group, and I'd like to also just re-highlight that this is work that has been completed thus far, but is also ongoing. So this is not a preview of work and analysis and exploration to be completed. You know, in the future, this is actually work that has largely been, I want to say complete because there's work, still more work to be done, but it is in progress. So there's been a lot of hard work over by the team representing really a large cross-section of the organization that has, over the past 6 months, that has gotten us to the point of being able to provide this update today. So this has been an ongoing project, and it will continue to be moving forward. So the operations group is investigating current and emerging broadband technologies, some of the concerns which we just addressed, identifying known challenges with deploying broadband and network management infrastructure. And that goes for everything from what type of network architecture to choose in terms of fiber versus, you know, something like the active Ethernet, or to geographic concerns. What are the concerns if we were to move into a potential deployment of infrastructure? And this is really capturing the width and breadth from a technical standpoint. What is the scope of the challenge from a technical standpoint? Mm-hmm. And examining the risks and benefits of different system architectures. So there's more than one way to deploy a large scale, wide area broadband network. What are the options and what are the risks and benefits of a given technology subset? And then exploring models, and I think this is very important, for public-private and public-public partnerships to leverage current infrastructure within our service territory. So there is broadband infrastructure throughout San Luis County. It is clearly not located in all areas, or you know, we would not have a gap in coverage, but it is located in many areas, and coverage, while centered in the metropolitan areas, does exist. We have existing infrastructure. And some of that infrastructure is owned by private parties, some of it is owned by public entities. Understanding where that infrastructure is, how we can work with that infrastructure and leverage what does currently exist and the services that are currently provided. From a theoretical standpoint, while not making any commitments or decisions or anything about partnerships, but just understanding what the menu of options is out there is really, really important. If we were to look currently at regulatory restrictions, in the end, we would be required to have partners that ride our infrastructure potential service because we are not permitted to offer retail services. Lacking a change or barring a change in the regulatory environment, there would by default be partners, maybe some private, maybe some public, who are permitted to offer retail services to the end user that would be leasing bandwidth on our potential network of the future. So I think it's very, very important to underscore that at this point, it is the concept of partnerships is pretty well baked in to any discussion of a potential remedy in this area. Okay, and the fiscal working group did a great job engaging with peer utilities from across the state and the region to understand differing internal and external business models. And this is something that I'll cover in the next slide, but this has been a definite, clear point of emphasis from our peers, that as much as the external business model is clearly important to any delivery of service, the internal business model is equally as important in terms of how we structure the internal ownership of potential assets, who quote unquote owns the network, how we account for internal charges against bandwidth usage, regulatory considerations, permitting, all of these internal factors are exceptionally important to making sure that we get the internal workings correct so that the external business model is relatively easy to execute. And then, of course, along with that, identifying fiscal risks for the various models. So, you know, with differing models and different service architectures come differing fiscal risks and potential benefits. And they've done a fantastic job of taking a look at what those potential options are. And then also assessing potential funding considerations, both internal and external. So taking a look at if we just chose to fund completely internally, what would that look like? Completely externally, what are our options? Who's offering potential subsidies in this area? Are there incentives to consider? What is the fiscal landscape associated with not only our current state, but also a projected future state? So that leads us to three very high-level takeaways based on our work and analysis in education thus far. And as we've engaged with other peers and we've engaged with entities around the nation, it's very apparent that, you know, the last mile is the most expensive and difficult infrastructure to provision. And this really is the primary reason why private internet service providers are not serving all customers in all areas of our territory. And so when we look at this in terms of provisioning infrastructure, while we know that we're going to need to build infrastructure in a potential offering throughout the county, potentially, it really gets down to how do we classify, categorize, architect, and fund service delivery over relatively short distances, potentially, right? I mean, maybe it is a mile, maybe it's a couple hundred yards to connect individual premises, houses, businesses, et cetera, that exist in these unserved and underserved areas to the fiber infrastructure backbone. So, and that is really a tough nut to crack. And as we noted, it is also, not coincidentally, the most expensive part of the infrastructure to provision. And then also, as I just addressed, internal business model is critically important. So we're spending a lot of time considering what those models might look like, what are the benefits associated with those, what are the risks associated with those, and understanding how we might want to structure something in the future if a decision is made to proceed into this type of offering. And then, of course, as I've noted throughout, changing political landscapes at the local, state, and federal level will likely bring new opportunities, but also maybe some potential unforeseen challenges in our current regulatory climate. So we've been keeping a close eye on the Washington State Legislature and actions taking place in this session, but also staying tuned to things happening at the local and the federal level, because I think it goes without saying that over the course of the next months and potentially years, things will very likely change dramatically within this space as public and elected bodies begin to take action that could potentially change or very likely will change the business dynamics of the broadband climate. So all that being said, where do we go from here? And really our intent at this point is to begin to bring in the outside expertise that we referenced earlier. And that is to provide a balanced input. So we have a lot of internal knowledge, we have a lot of internal expertise. We've spent a lot of time discussing these from our internal perspective, but being very circumspect and aware of the fact that that only represents half or part of the total data associated with scoping this problem, right? So we're going to reach out, work with industry experts, via a request for proposal for industry expert consulting services to come in and provide us with a broadband industry level perspective, provide us with data from whether it's economic data, demographic data, population shift data, things that we can begin to project into the future for what the service offering or what potential gaps might exist 1, 5, 10 years down range. So that we can make a valid and full faith due diligence set of business case analyses to then bring back to this body in the future with a recommendation for how the staff sees a potential engagement in this space in the future. So in order, publicly advertise the RFP, work alongside those consultants. I want to be very clear that we're not intending on turning over the project to an outside entity and then just telling us what to think, that we would be working alongside. We remain very actively engaged with industry experts and consultants to then conduct a business case analysis or analyses grounded in established principles that provide a metric for producing a recommendation for how we see proceeding or not proceeding into this area in the future. And with that, it brings us to the question slide. And I will note that Brenda, Gordon, and Jim, and Mark, who led our outreach efforts, are on this call currently. So we have the assembled team of broadband leads to answer any questions or concerns.
Questions, commissioners, comments?
I think I've already asked most of mine or made my comments.
This Commissioner Olson, just a real high level. I think I've expressed that I've got a lot of interest in this, looking at the pros and cons over time and the reality that the cost of the, what would you say, the end of the line service, that's why the for-profit telecommunications industry is not interested in that. I think that what I'm seeing is what I've read is the customer thinks because public is associated with the service that's provided that they're going to get a cheaper service. And I'm not quite sold. And I think that you've addressed all of that in your presentation, that those are things you're going to look at. But you know something, and I think you touched on it, that really stood out to me in terms of the overall concept is that we are a pretty regulated industry, and we kind of have a what would you call it, a pseudo service there. In other words, we're not a monopoly, not a monopoly. We're kind of a pseudo monopoly versus going into the business with an industry that is a completely different model than what we have. And as you're looking at that, I would hope that, and I know you will, take a look at the challenges there. We're not entrepreneurial. We can't turn on a dime. And the issue you talked about, the various technologies, the minute we link on a technology and provide that, I can guarantee you 3 months down the road, my cousin in Linwood has this and I want it. So, we're just, our model is not that nimble. So I'm hoping that as we look at this, that we take that into consideration. Those are just some high level thoughts.
Absolutely, and thank you very much. I feel very confident that those considerations of both internal and external modeling, but also, you know, more subtly, the effects or not or impacts of our established culture as a utility, and whether or not that culture truly meshes or does support, as you said, a more nimble or agile offering, I think will absolutely be part of our internal considerations. That this is more than, while we're calling it a business case analysis, I very much want to ensure, and I consider it part of my responsibility as the project lead, to ensure that we're taking a look at this beyond dollars and cents, that this isn't going to be a dry quantitative analysis, but also a very qualitative analysis, dare I say a subjective analysis, in some cases, of whether or not this organization does have a role to fill, to be a responsible partner. And I think that this is something that the staff of the study has talked about at great length. And certainly I've talked about it at great length with district leadership, is that, you know, it's not only an analysis of whether we can provide a remedy, but also whether we can do so responsibly, to be good stewards of our customers' dollars and desires. And whether or not we can truly become a partner that provides benefit in this space, as opposed to maybe just another organization that is kind of piling into this space. And I think that we're, doing a very effective, faithful, and due diligence analysis and exploration, of those concepts.
Yeah, and I know you will be, but, on the positive side for the communities, this results in economic development.
Absolutely.
And I mean, there's some real positives beyond just students having computers at home to do distance learning. So there are a number of positives for a community. The most important I see would be not only linking those to the individual customer to the broadband, but also drawing interest for business, expanding businesses in the area if you have that technology. And I know you're going to look at all of this, but in my study, I was just amazed at the complexity of this. And I know you've got your work cut out for you.
Yes, this is I also share that same realization through my own explorations, where my initial understanding of the broadband space, especially being an IT professional, was largely technical. And as I learned and grew into a more mature understanding of the business space and the factors that affect it, it is deeply complex. And it really does touch on so many factors of our social, economic, political, and future climate. It's a good learning experience, but I also think it's a very necessary and timely undertaking at this point for the district to position ourselves with knowledge and understanding, in order to respond to changes within this space.
Yeah, I think that's right on point, Kevin, that the timing is right for us to engage in it and educate ourselves and study this. I think the case is being made in some ways with this wave of emphasis on broadband, but that broadband may become considered an essential service at some point in the future. And the interesting thing is, of course, it has been a while ago. I guess I put it in comparison to my old age, but wasn't that long ago that the telecom industry was deregulated, which I think is in part why it has led to underserved and unserved areas of the country.
Yeah, Commissioner Wolf, enthusiastically second what Commissioner Olson said. I see her reasoning as being really important. And I wanted to know which of these departments, I think it might be Jim Herling's, which of them might be also looking at grants, funding through grants, because with this new administration, I do think there's going to be a lot of grant money available under infrastructure.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so Jim and his team, as well as the study writ large, and certainly Brenda and her legislative and regulatory team members are looking at grant options, loan options, low rate money, and anything that could provide a source of potential funding
in right.
is being looked at, whether that be you know, incentives, whether that be outright, you know, said grants, whether that comes from the federal level, which federal agencies might be offering programs, what the details of those programs are. And that's also going to be part of what we rely on industry expertise to bring forth as well. As we can do our internal analysis, but you know, I don't think anyone would classify themselves as an expert in funding large scale broadband deployments. And so we'd like to talk to those people who are, so that we can enhance our own understanding and education and awareness of those options.
Kevin, I have a couple of questions. The first one is, the PUDs in Washington that have put their toes into the water, how successful have they been at getting internet service providers to do the last mile? Are they anywhere close to 100% of their service territory, or and what are those differences in their territories compared to ours?
Oh, yeah, that's a difference.
I'll speak in gross generalizations, basically.
Perfect.
As a way to kind of boil all this into one. If we look at the PUDs that offer the notable broadband services, right, we see largely these are counties with condensed or metropolitan areas where most of their population is living, and it's easier to serve, right? And of course you have the ranchers and farmers that are living a little bit more further afoot, but we're talking about single digit percentages of those counties, right? So they're able to provide large scale coverage in a condensed semi-metropolitan area and capture a large swath with relatively minimal infrastructure. That gives them a major advantage. They have linked development of their wholesale broadband network directly to provisioning of their distribution network, which, due to the size and relative comparative non-complexity of their systems versus our systems, they're able to combine that bandwidth. Not only do they have a smaller population, they also have less complex systems. So that is a way that they've captured synergies that we're not sure that we can do, nor are we sure that we can't do. But it's a factor that goes into, I think, enhancing the business case associated with those offerings. I would also like to point out that their take rate, which is the rate of subscription of premises within their territory, is also equivalent to the national average, which is 44% is the number. So we see that, you know, due to the power of large numbers, right, we see that 44% played out at the national level. So they are not, even in these notable counties east of the crest and the utilities that provide service there, we're not seeing, anything above the national average take rate of the midpoints. So not satisfying 90% of the need.
So the take rate is the percentage of people who have broadband, or the people who, or the homes that are buying it from the utility?
The homes that are buying it from a retail service provider that is selling services or broadband bandwidth built on the utility's infrastructure.
Okay.
So they have internet service providers that are on the utility's network to provide retail service, because PUDs are not permitted to provide retail service. So they are,
right,
by default, required to enter into partnerships. And those partnerships, in some cases, there's some utilities are in partnership with one, maybe two ISPs. Others are in partnership with many into the teams. And those are both large providers, main GNO, and very small providers, small businesses.
So that question is easy compared to my next question. And that is, how do we know what the future of broadband will look like, especially in rural areas? And so I'm thinking of the phone company who plowed copper wire almost everywhere to every home, and now find that most people don't have landlines. They have cell phones, and they don't have those customers. I know in my service territory, some customers, I think it's called Starlink. It's the Elon Musk company. There's some beta testers who initially are reporting, you know, really, really high speeds. Mm-hmm. How do we know what the direction of it is going, that we aren't getting in on the end of a hardwired solution?
Absolutely. I think you're asking a fantastic question, which is exceptionally, as you noted, it's hard to codify that and project that at this point. But I think that underscores the need for bringing in outside perspective. And experts that are in more in the know. I don't think anybody has a crystal ball, but I think bringing in experts that do have a more informed opinion and more data to suggest what the future of this space might look like better positions us to make a decision of, to your point, are we at the tail end of this? Are we midstream? We know we're not early adopters. We know we're not the first, you know, within the state or certainly the region to potentially think about offering this. So are we over a, you know, notional midpoint or a precipice in which our assets could become stranded in the future when services move in a different direction?
Yeah.
And to my initial slide, we are doing our absolute best to make sure that we remain aware and cognizant of those changes and considerations and not become locked into the current paradigm. Because even the current wired paradigm is changing dramatically beneath us, right? The wires, the ability to put more data and bandwidth through the technology itself is increasing exponentially on a yearly basis. And so before, we used to talk about, you know, 25 down and three up, right? Now we're talking 150 symmetrical or gig symmetrical, right? So gigabit, about 1,000 up and 1,000 down, right? And there are people that have those services right now. But how can we offer, a wired fiber optic solution? If so, what are the technical limitations associated with that? Can the infrastructure be provisioned in a manner that is cost effective now, but also allows for future expansion in the future as we go to, you know, gigabit plus symmetrical requirements? And that, I think, is really, really tough. Even if we look at not the provisioning thereof, but the forecasting thereof is a tough task, even within the wired paradigm, let alone when we bring in the paradigm of emerging technologies and the fact that private industry, due to corporate citizenship or more likely financial motivations, is also moving quickly in this space. So, I think that's the best summary that I can probably offer to why the situation as we see it now will by default be fundamentally changed due to either legislation or private industry 6, 12, 18 months from now.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I'm glad we're working on this.
This Commissioner Olson, just to piggyback, I think I was saying the same thing as you were, Commissioner Logan, but about our model, business model versus the investor-owned competitive market model, and we could build out something, and 3 months from that, 3 months from that, we could have somebody come in and offer more bells and whistles. We can't turn that fast. So, you know, I guess I would like, it's going to be interesting for me to see how we would position ourselves given all of the other stuff that feeds into it. And would we end up being having a white elephant that nobody wants?
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Education and awareness that will come out of this study will be.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. In the meantime, we have so many customers who have such a huge need for something. And I fear that no matter what solution is by what entity, it's going to be a long ways off. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. I appreciate your time this morning.
Good job, Kevin.
Anything else for us this morning, John?
No, I think that wraps it up.
Okay. So we don't have time for public comment this morning because we have an executive session. So we encourage people to come back for public comment at our when we reconvene at 1:30 p.m. during the afternoon public comment agenda item. So it is now 11:41 and the board will recess into executive session to review the performance of a public employee under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meeting Act. It is anticipated the executive session will last approximately 60 minutes with no public announcements. The regular meeting will reconvene virtually at 1:30 p.m. So commissioners, you should see on your calendars a Zoom link to go to the executive session. It's 11:41. Let's start our executive session in about 5 minutes. If that works.
Excuse me.
And to clarify, it's actually a Teams invitation on your calendar.
Teams, sorry. Thank
that's
you.
That's what I wanted to say, yeah.
That's what I meant to say, sorry. Does that work, commissioners, 5 minutes?
Sure.
Melissa, will that work? You're muted.
Sure.
Okay.
That gives me time to get staff on.